This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Logan, Before I Fall, The Shack, Table 19, Wolves, and A United Kingdom. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and of course, the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
We had a break from celebrity deaths. Now we have a new one, and this came out. It actually happened last weekend, but we didn't know about it until Sunday. Bill Paxton passed away. He was only 61. It was after complications during surgery. And this was particularly impactful to me, not just because I loved him as an actor and I loved the work, and he has such iconic roles in some of my favorite science fiction movies, but he was currently acting. You kind of have two different types of celebrity deaths. You have the celebrity death who passes away that people were like, oh, I didn't even realize that person was still alive. And that happens like when you have, you know, these actors who are like 90 years old and they've been retired for, you know, maybe 10 years. And then it's a shame to see them go, but they've clearly ended their career and are, you know, at the end of their life. But then you got people like Bill Paxton who was actively making stuff. And I mean, it's not that 61 super young, but it certainly is young to pass away. And he was in the middle of doing a TV show version of Training Day. I mean, he was knee deep in stuff. This was not expected. I mean, it wasn't like Anton Yelchin, who, you know, was just a horrible accident that nobody expected. And it was just so tragic. But this was one of these things that kind of took everyone by surprise. And the reason Bill Paxton was so impactful to movies is because of his iconic nature. He was kind of this everyman, but you always recognized him. And so that kind of ratcheted him, you know, a little bit above character actor, at least early in his career. You could talk about most memorable roles. I would say something like, obviously, Aliens. I mean, a character of Hudson, game over, man, game over. I mean, that is an iconic moment. And then, of course, with him in these franchises, he's the only actor to have been killed by a Terminator in the Terminator, by an alien in Aliens, and by a Predator in Predator 2. Although I think Lance Henriksen also gets that because he was killed by a Terminator in the Terminator. He was killed by an alien, I guess you could say, in Aliens, and then he was killed by a Predator in Alien versus Predator. But I mean, that's a neat little nod to Bill Paxton. And but even as a greater actor than just this run-of-the-mill character actor from the 80s, he was doing stuff like A Simple Plan, which is probably one of my favorite movies with him. It's a Sam Raimi directed film, and it's a crime drama, and it stars Billy Bob Thornton. And of course, Billy Bob Thornton's a little bit more of the weird character in this one. But Bill Paxton, he gives a really nuanced performance. He's really good in that movie. If you haven't seen A Simple Plan, check that out. And then recently he's shown up in stuff. Like, I remember, I think he was in that movie Two Guns as this Texas Ranger. And we just recently saw him in Edge of Tomorrow with Tom Cruise. He was the drill sergeant. I mean, there's some just very iconic roles. And it's sad to see him go. So, yes, rest in peace, Bill Paxton. The next piece of news I want to talk about, how could I not talk about the wrap-up of the Oscars? I mean, look at what happened. I mean, the biggest shocker of the all was the ending. No one expected that. And I mean, I don't know how much more to say. I don't think it's an upset that La La Land didn't win. And I had a listener ask me what I thought of it being the biggest upset in its Oscar history. Well, I don't know. I mean, Crash winning Best Picture was kind of an upset over Brokeback Mountain. I would say that Shakespeare in Love was a pretty big upset over Saving Private Ryan. I mean, even just recently, Spotlight was another one last year. Nobody expected Spotlight to win, and that won. But ultimately, the mess that happened, it was not handled well. And the Pricewaterhouse accountants are either being fired or barred from working on the Oscars ever again. I love the fact that they're called accountants and all they're doing is handing out envelopes at this point. They're senior brass, but they were starstruck and tweeting and the guy mixed up the envelopes and it was his fault, but it was also the woman's fault for not catching it because both of them were supposed to have that memorized and they should have been on top of that the second La La Land was announced for Best Picture. Because it's not really Warren Beatty's fault if you look at what happened to him. He was given the wrong envelope and he's old. He didn't have a script. And I was pretty close to all my picks, except I said La La Land would win Best Picture. And boy, did it come close. But I also don't think Jimmy Kimmel handled himself well in sort of recovering from. He kept trying to goof it off. And it was clear he was at a loss for handling. I think Ellen would have been so much better at handling this because I think she's a lot more of a sensitive human being than Jimmy Kimmel. And that gives to the bigger point. I don't think Jimmy Kimmel was that great of a host. I think he was just doing his TV show shtick, which leads me into the next thing, all the stuff with people asking, you know, was it overtly political? But you know what I have to say? Jimmy Kimmel, yeah, he took a lot of digs and even was trolling Trump on Twitter during the ceremony. I think that most of the stuff that Kimmel said is just basic late night jokes. There was nothing huge. He wasn't making some big call to save the ACA, or he wasn't making some big call to investigate the Russian connection. He was just making standard late night jokes. And then anyone who did kind of make a more specific message was kind of relevant, I have to say. I mean, Gael Garcia Bernal saying a little bit about being an immigrant while he's giving out Best Animation. I don't know if that was relevant to the movie, but he is an immigrant. I mean, he's from Mexico. But even if you look at stuff like the people who won the White Helmets for the short film, the documentary, they're talking about, they're quoting the Quran as to why they do what they do. It's relevant. It's in the movie itself. So it wasn't like they swerved off topic for that. Same thing with Asghar Farhadi, who was sending a representative to talk about him being Iranian and wouldn't have been able to come initially and then is staying at home in solidarity. I mean, it was relevant to what was going on. You may not agree with it, but at least you didn't have a Michael Moore speech or like when Richard Gere was talking about the Dalai Lama in the 90s. Everything was relatively on topic. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Two real quick ones I want to hit. I want to play this real quick trailer for Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Long Haul. They're rebooting the franchise. It comes out on May 19th.
He is the Wimpy Kid.
If there's one thing I've learned from my years of being a kid, it's that you have zero control over your own life.
Who's excited about the Great Heffley Road Trip?
4 days in the car. Together?
This summer.
Player Expo's in Indianapolis this weekend. It's only 2 inches away.
Tomorrow we ride, compadre.
He's going further.
Changing destination.
Than he's ever gone before.
This looks like it's very similar to the other ones. It's just they've replaced the cast, but it kind of looks like kind of the same little universe and tone of the movie. I think Alicia Silverstone's kind of interesting playing the mom, because I remember when she was 16 years old in The Crush, which is kind of odd. I think the kid's a little more punkish, which, you know, he doesn't seem as likable as the original Greg Heffley, but I mean, these look fun. These are fun movies. My youngest son, who's 8, is dying to see this. So we're going to go check it out and have a lot of fun this summer. The next one is Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. Now, I did cover it just a couple weeks ago, but we got a little bit more of an intricate trailer that had more to it, so you get a little bit more of the story, so here it is.
The dead have taken command of the sea. They're searching for a girl, and a sparrow.
I have heard stories of a mighty Spanish captain who's hunted and killed thousands of men.
No. Pirates.
I once knew a Spaniard named something in Spanish.
He's coming for you, Jack.
This looks good. I like the Pirates movies. I like the fact that this doesn't look as heavy and plotting and morose as especially the third one. And it looks like it's a little more fun. It's got a great cast with Javier Bardem as the bad guy. And of course, great special effects. This looks like it could be a good one. And this one opens on Memorial Day weekend, May 26th. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about three movies: Before I Fall, The Shack, and Wolves. Because we can, can. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We're just going to jump right in because I'm going to try and cover three of them. The reason I'm covering three is because two of these movies were not screened for me. I was not given an opportunity. And I already have seen Logan on Thursday night because that wasn't screened locally. And so I couldn't fit in two other movies. I do have a life outside of... outside of this, and I do have like children to take care of. So I'm going to really just kind of pound through these first two. That look like they're like low players anyways. They're low hanging fruit on this weekend with where you've got Logan's probably going to sweep. But all right, let's talk about Before I Fall. A high school senior finds herself living the same day over and over again, perhaps making her change to a better person.
Maybe for you, there's a tomorrow. What happened last night?
What are you talking about?
Been having deja vu all day long.
It's all high school things. Just a blip.
Watch out for the truck.
What truck?
Regardless of anything I do or say, the day starts and ends the same.
The obvious connection is to call this a high school version of Groundhog Day, which it kind of is. And if you watch the trailer, it's very clear she lives the day over, only at least in the trailer. Again, I'm going by the trailer because I haven't seen it. It looks like it ends with a car crash. And so everything comes to an end and she has no future. So she has to live that day over and over and over again. I'm assuming she's supposed to learn stuff. It does seem a little bit overly elite angst. I mean, there's a scene, there's a bit in the trailer. It's not in what I played, but one of the girls says, "Oh, we totally experienced high school. We kissed the hottest guys. We went to the best parties." And I'm like, wow. I don't care whether you're a girl or a boy or how old you are. That's just sort of a very shallow look at life. And that's kind of pathetic. Even when I was 18, that was not the sum total of my life, was to say, "Hey, I went to high school. I kissed some girls and I went to some parties." You know, I mean, that's just, come on. There's a lot to the high school experience, and kissing people and going to parties, there's so much more to that. And so I think, and she's supposed to be kind of like the mean girls type in the movie. It feels very CW. It feels like something you would have seen on TV. And it's a bit of a spotlight for Zoe Deutsch. And she's been in stuff, like she was in Why Him, and she's sort of like the hot young thing. She's like a young version of Ella Fisher, who's now, you know, married and kind of bit out of the acting game. I think she looks very similar to Ella Fisher. But there's nothing remarkable. She's very pretty, but she's kind of just unremarkable. She feels like a TV star to me. She feels like somebody who would have been on like Gossip Girl. It doesn't look like it's going to be my cup of tea. But, you know, if you're a teenager and you've kissed a lot of guys and you want to go to a lot of parties and that's how you define a great high school experience, this might be your cup of tea. But I got to give it a preemptive suck because they didn't show it to us.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Shack. We're not talking about Shaquille O'Neal. We're talking about a building. After his daughter is murdered, a grieving father is invited to the remote shack where she died by a mysterious group of people he suspects are divine beings.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
We've lost so much already. I don't want to lose you too.
The letter showed up in my mailbox. With no tracks in the snow.
You're not thinking about going back there, are you?
I gotta do something.
You know, this isn't a good idea.
It's crazy, but this is all I got.
Mackenzie Allen Phillips. I've been looking forward to this.
Do I know you?
Not very well, but we can work on that.
The most interesting thing I find about this movie is kind of its origin, sort of like Fifty Shades of Grey and The Martian, I think this started out as an ebook. This started out as just a non-paper published book and kind of became this big bestseller. And it's a Christian based space movie. The biggest objection I have to this is stars Sam Worthington, who's super boring as an actor. I don't think he's a good actor. I mean, he's been in big movies that have done well in spite of him, like Clash of the Titans or the obvious one is Avatar. But this looks like it does the two things that I don't like seeing in movies in general, but you see this a lot in faith-based movies because they're always going to be significant and emotional. It takes you way down because it's about the murder of a child. And I don't want to deal with that. I don't even want to live vicariously through that. I don't want to experience somebody else's grief. I mean, I don't even want to think about that. So that's one thing I don't like in some of these real heavy downers. And but then it has this over. It looks like it's going to be overly schmaltzy and cheesy. I mean, a lot of these characters he meets in the shack are, I'm assuming, are representing, you know, the Holy Trinity, I think, or something like that. The Father, Son, Holy Ghost, and. It looks like it's, it just looks like it's going to be so corny. I mean, it looks like it's going to be well acted at least. I mean, Sam Worthington aside, I mean, it's got like Octavia Spencer in it, you know, but you know how you can tell that it's a faith-based movie nowadays? If it's got a country star in it, like Trace Atkins, or in this one, it's Tim McGraw, or you're going to always have some country stars. There always seem to be a star in these movies, that have a faith-based angle to them. I don't know. I have to give this one a preemptive suck too because they didn't show. This is funny because the publicist even emailed me. He's like, this movie's coming out this weekend. And I wrote back, I go, any chance I can see it early? She's like, we're not screening it. I'm like, well, that's not a good sign. Preemptive suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Wolves. A high school basketball star struggles with college prospects while his father suffers a dangerous gambling addiction.
Anthony, can I see you?
We haven't received your tuition check for second semester.
I don't want to stress out Mom. I know she's working like 1,000 hours a week, so.
Yeah, you did the right thing.
What's happening on the college front?
Do you have the talent, Anthony?
I fight hard for my scholarships.
I'm looking for someone who will stand out.
Long time, no talk.
Michigan State's playing at home. There's no way they're gonna lose.
I know you drained the college account.
How much you want to put down?
30.
This is released by IFC. It's not about werewolves at all, which is what I originally thought it would be about. But no, it's essentially about gambling addiction. And his father's played by Michael Shannon. I think Michael Shannon's one of the best new actors that we're seeing a lot lately. I mean, he was nominated for an Oscar this past week. I think he should have won. Well, I respect the heck out of him is he does huge movies like Man of Steel and then turns around and does these rinky-dink little tiny little IFC movies that probably have a budget of less than $1 million. And I respect the heck out of that. And his story's the most interesting. And that's really the crux of the problem I have with this. He plays the father. Carla Gugino plays the mom. And this the kid is the basketball player. Well, it's the basketball player's story. It's the son's story as he's learning to deal with the fact that he's looking at college prospects. And since his dad has a gambling addiction, there's the problem with college money. And so he needs to get a scholarship. But he's, big fish in a small pond there, and he wants to go to Cornell where he's going to be a small fish in a big pond, and then it's him dealing with the fact that, you know, on the court in high school it's kind of a protected zone, and he goes and plays street ball with these guys. I was bored with that. They threw everything at this kid. They threw the dad with the drinking and gambling problem. They threw a teenage pregnancy in there. They throw racial issues. I mean, they throw everything at this kid, and I'm like, no. The interesting story here is Michael Shannon's, but he's kind of a supporting character. His role is what I found interesting, but they just kind of, no pun intended, they sidelined him. And Carla Gugino is great in the movie, but she isn't really given a whole lot to do. She this is your typical wife character in a movie. She gets a little more lines, but she is still completely there to serve the male characters in this movie. So yeah, this is kind of a swing and a miss, or a, you know, shoot and miss the basket. What is it? It's not a swish. A swish is when it goes straight in. I don't know. I don't follow basketball. What are you talking to me for? Anyways, I'm going to have to say that Wolves kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Logan and Table 19. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Slowing down a little bit. I kind of rushed through those three movies, but I mean, it's because I didn't see two of them. But let's talk about some more movies. The movies I have seen. Let's get diving right in there. The first one is Logan, which is a hugely anticipated film. We'll talk about it on the other side of the trailer here. So let me give you a synopsis. In an alternative world of the X-Men, Logan has left his fame as Wolverine to waste away, only to be pulled back as a reluctant hero to save a young mutant brought to him by Charles Xavier.
We got ourselves an X-Men fan. Maybe a quarter of it happened. And not like this. In the real world, people die.
Logan.
I don't want to talk about it.
Logan.
Just stop.
Be careful. I need the girl.
What girl?
Go get her.
No.
No.
This is one of the first big anticipated films of 2017. I mean, I guess maybe the Lego Batman movie, but I don't know if that was necessarily super excited. We haven't had as close as I could say to an event film yet this year. And if you recall last year in March, we had Batman versus Superman, which was a huge deal. After having, of course, Deadpool in February. This year we have Logan. It's kind of that first salvo into the early spring movie season. There was a lot of buzz going into this for several reasons. First of all, because it's a different version of Wolverine, and I think that's significant. Let's table that for a second. But the other big reason people were excited about this movie, at least what I was hearing, is that it's rated R. Especially fans of Wolverine, not of the old 60s X-Men character, but as it got more mature and as it had spin-off comics, I mean, talking about fans of reading the series in graphic novel and comic book form, they liked the idea of having an R-rated Logan who could go in there and he could cut somebody's head off. And you could see that in the movie without having to cut around it or not show any blood. And they can have him go on a rampage with his claws and chop off limbs and just eviscerate people, because that's kind of, I mean, he's got these giant claws. That's his superpower. I have giant metal claws out of my hand and I'm invincible. So I'm going to kill a lot of people with that way. And they've always sort of skirted around that in the PG-13 X-Men main series. Even when they did the Wolverine, which was, I think, the closest you ever got to a rampaging Wolverine 4 years ago. Even then, it was kind of, it was bloodless because it was needed to be PG-13. That was also directed by James Mangold. This is directed by James Mangold. So that excited a lot of people, and it is a more mature X-Men movie. It's not even really an X-Men movie. It's a more mature Wolverine movie. This is not something you want to take a little kid to. First of all, it's violent, it's rated R, but it's a movie for grown-ups. And I have to admit, that's one of my big criticisms of it. Not that it's a movie for grown-ups. I'm all for that, and I understand the need for that. I just found it boring. I'm sorry. I know that so many people out there, fanboys, are so excited about this, and I mean, it was a packed house that I went and saw it. I had to go see it on a Thursday night, and it was jam-packed. What happened was I actually bought a decent seat in one theater, because I bought it online early, and then I got there and I found out that theater, the projector wasn't working. And I'm like, I need to see this. Give me the next available movie. And instead of waiting around for an hour, I only waited around 20 minutes and went and saw it, the next one, but I had to sit in the front row. And so, I could almost put my feet on the wall. That is how close I was to the screen. And that didn't affect my viewing of it. I still got the movie and I can still appreciate what it was. It was boring. My problem is that when you take the character of Logan and you reduce him to this, an old man, I guess you could say. I mean, he's old because, you know, he's like in the mythology, he was born in the 1800s or something like that. But, and then his mutation took over. But of course, in this movie, you know, because he's invincible, he ages very slowly, but it's taking its toll. He doesn't heal as quickly. He's in pain a lot. He's always drinking. He's self-medicating, you know, and he's grumpy and he's grizzled. The problem is, I'm not a big fan of that kind of character. I've seen that kind of character. And then those are very popular. You know, you see these things where it's just a depressing character, just somebody who just is out there waiting for himself to die. And that's, I think, what the character was doing. And so while I can appreciate what Mangold was doing with the character, I just found it boring. And yeah, it's kind of neat to have Charles Xavier as sort of this alternative version of Professor X, but still his character was kind of just as boring. There's too much dialogue and it runs like 2 hours and 15 minutes. There's a lot they could have trimmed out a lot in this movie. And then the action sequences, my problem with the action sequences, once you got past the coolness of Wolverine cutting somebody's head off, they were very repetitive. They have a lot of fight scenes. They have a lot of action scenes, but they all kind of play out the same. And the sort of like the real version of the X-Men angle to this, this has been done before. I remember there was that movie Mr. Holmes a couple years ago with Ian McKellen, where he basically played if Sherlock Holmes were real, and he's always trying to live down the books that were written about him. And this is kind of what's going on here. They have some interesting information that I would consider more complex to the story instead of just a moping Logan for 2.25 hours. But there was some stuff that showed up, but even then it was kind of like, it was really cliche and corny, and it kind of ham-fisted into the story. I just didn't think it was very well done, and it should have been shorter. I was just bored, and I just wanted to leave. I kept checking my watch. So I'm going to have to say, sorry guys, Logan kind of sucks. And I know I'm in the minority on that one.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Table 19. After being dumped by her boyfriend, a woman is demoted from maid of honor to a member of a random misfit table where she finds unlikely friends.
We didn't think you'd be coming.
You RSVP'd no, and then yes, on an RSVP card that you barbecued.
After 2 years, you break up with me over text? Shh. Good luck with your future endeavors. Were you firing me?
What right the? Here.
Do you know what Francie's mother calls table 19? The table that should have known to send regrets, but not before sending something nice off the registry.
What?
The table that could disappear in the middle of the wedding and no one would even notice.
The table of people they don't care about?
How are we doing back here?
The saving grace of this movie is some decent writing here and there, and a really good cast, actually. It stars Anna Kendrick as this fallen maid of honor, and she's great, and she can carry a movie, and she's adorable, and she's very likable, and she's very accessible. She's not like perfect princess model type, but she's very pretty and adorable, but she's also kind of adorkable and awkward at times, and that's what makes her so, you really think you could run into her, well, I mean, not me, fat, old, married, mid-40s, Kevin Carr's not gonna have a shot with her, but you can think in your mind, if you were like 25 and you ran into Anna Kendrick somewhere, you could actually talk to her, as opposed to, you know, if you couldn't run into somebody who's just like model, gorgeous, pretty kind of thing, and that's sort of her Julia Roberts, Sandra Bullock appeal of Anna Kendrick. You also have people like Craig Robinson, who's very funny. He plays against Lisa Kudrow as his wife. They actually work well together. Stephen Merchant, who's also in Logan, by the way, but Stephen Merchant is in this movie, and he's very funny. I love to see him get more work. I mean, he's got two movies coming out this weekend, so that's good for him. Good job, Stephen. But I would love to see more with Stephen Merchant and June Squibb's in this movie. She's very funny, and she's a little gem in this film. And they take kind of this mediocre script that's not brilliant and not great, but passable as sort of a light romance with some heavy moments at times. And it works. It's their interaction and their delivery of lines and sort of working together. And it feels like that independent movie that just happened to strike a really good cast. And you know, as it resolves, they work it too much. They twist the screws too much to tighten up the ending, and they end up stripping the heads, and it doesn't hold together at the end. You know, like that third act, it really struggles. But like that first and second act are actually kind of charming and fun, and there's some laugh out loud moments. But, you know, it's an imperfect little film, but it's, you know, maybe worth checking out as like a rental or matinee or something like that. So I'm going to have to say Table 19 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about A United Kingdom, the weekly box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Doctor Strange. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's do the last movie review, and that is A United Kingdom. It's actually out in a couple smaller cities, and it's rolling out, and it's finally coming to Central Ohio, which is where I'm from, so now we're also going to have it talk about on the show around the country. Why not? Because it's worth talking about. In this historical drama, the would-be king of Botswana marries a white English woman and brings her back to Africa while he struggles with his people and the oppressive British government.
My grandfather was a king. I am his heir. I have a responsibility to return home to my people.
If you choose to marry the leader of an African nation, you will be responsible for the downfall of the British Empire in Africa.
You choose a life of insults and shame.
Over two decades of preparing you to be our king, this is how you face me.
My home. Our home.
Who do you think will accept you as if it were your right to be our queen?
This is, of course, a period piece. It takes place right after World War II in that era. And it's when the British were ruling very colonization heavy with Britain back then. And they were, of course, ruling Southern Africa and South Africa being, of course, the main country, but also Botswana. And it has a really good cast. I mean, David Oyelowo plays the king, or the would-be king, and Rosamund Pike plays his wife. And I really like David Oyelowo. I think he's great. Ever since he really turned my head when he played Martin Luther King Jr., but other things I've seen him in, he's just a fantastic actor. And Rosamund Pike, it's funny, I'm not a huge fan of hers. You know, I've seen movies I've liked her in, like, you know, I actually liked her as a Bond girl in Die Another Day, and I thought she was quite good in Gone Girl. But I've never been a huge fan of hers. I've always kind of blown hot and cold with her. She does a really good job acting. And what's interesting about this movie, it was a neat companion piece to watch because I saw Get Out either that night or the next day, because this was a week or two ago that I saw the screening for this. And the reason that this is a fascinating twofer of a movie is because they're both about race relations. Of course, Get Out's very overtly about race relations in America. I mean, like, and I said last week, you don't need to focus on the racial part. You can just watch it as a horror movie. But this one is about race relations in England. So it's completely outside of the US. It's a British movie. It has nothing to do with America. This is all British stuff. And you see the racism and the taboo of a black man dating or then marrying a white woman in England back then. And you see the struggles they run into and how, you know, he's looked down upon and seen as subhuman, et cetera, et cetera. But what's really, I thought, neat about this movie is then when they go to Africa, the tables are kind of turned. Even though the British government is kind of the head of state, it's all Africans there. And they're very skeptical of her because she's white. And they don't see her as part of their culture, and they see her as an outsider. And so it's not like they do it really heavy-handedly. This is just how the thing plays out, as I'm sure it would. You see it kind of flip over, and suddenly it's at the disadvantage to be white because you're then looked down upon and seen as an outsider and not right being there. And it also does sort of shine a little light on some pretty awful policies, international policies and domestic policies that the British had back then. I mean, you always think of, you know, a very pleasant thoughts of the British from World War II. You know, there are allies, et cetera, et cetera. But there are some pretty at times even more oppressive rules and laws that were at times some ways worse than American stuff. Like if you look at back to the movie about Alan Turing, The Imitation Game, it was illegal to be a homosexual then. In America, all that depended on local law. But I mean, so in this one, this shows how there's some really unpleasant things that the British government did back then that I think the British government as a whole kind of is a little bit embarrassed about. But it's a very well done movie and it's kind of uplifting and it's a sweet story and it shines a light. And I saw this in the movie Queen of Katwe last year, which also takes place in Africa. What I liked about that movie is they showed essentially the slums of this area, but it wasn't seen as just this crime ridden, every second you have a chance to get killed type of look at the African slums. That's just where they lived. And this was just the backdrop. And Botswana back then was one of the poorest countries in Africa. And they showed how poor they were and they showed the struggles they had to deal with. And they showed they didn't have a palace for the king. They have a ranch house, but it wasn't shown in a degrading way. And so I thought that was pretty good. So ultimately I'm going to say a United Kingdom rocks. It's a good movie to check out.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk real quick about the box office. Last week, I correctly predicted that Get Out would win the weekend with $30 million, not $20 million, as everyone else was saying. It made $33.5 million, which is huge, huge for that kind of movie. And I mean, people were predicting $20 million, if that. And it had a budget of $4.5 million. This movie's profitable now. This is why horror movies continue to be seen. This is why they do so well. This is why, like, Blumhouse is one of the most successful studios in the world because they do low cost, low risk, high return movies. And Get Out was a huge boon to them. Everything else came in under the top 10. I mean, the second movie was the Lego Batman movie with just under $20 million, and then John Wick with under 10. Rock Dog was at 11. Collide, which I liked to a degree, 1.5 million. Oh, that's pathetic. That's a terrible, that is awful. That is an alarmingly small amount for a movie to have been released with. Now, this week, the obvious one's going to be Logan. Logan's going to win the weekend. Everyone's debating on how much it's going to make. Some people are saying as low as 60. I think Fox is going with 60. I've seen it as high as 80. I'm going to split that difference and just say 70 million. I think the fan base is going to be out there. It's not going to be as big as Deadpool because it's not as appealing as Deadpool. Oh, by the way, Deadpool, they do have at least a showing I saw had a Deadpool 2 trailer at the beginning, had a bit of Deadpool in the beginning. So that's a little neat thing you get to see. Anyways, back to Logan. I'm curious to see how it plays because I think it's got a lot of hype. I don't know how well it's that hype and the good reviews are going to translate to the rest of just the average movie-going audience. The average movie-going audience might be like, this is a terrible superhero movie because they're expecting something. This might be one of those movies that pleases the fans, gets a really good beginning, and then drops like a stone. We'll see. But the one thing I do think you're going to see is I think you're going to see Moonlight creep back into the top 10. Within the top 10, you'd only need a million or $2 to break into the top 10. They're re-releasing it in theaters because it won the best picture this weekend and it made such news. In fact, that was the best thing for Moonlight, not just to win the best picture, but then to have the story because then everyone now knows that Moonlight for sure won the best picture. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The spotlight this week is on the Blu-ray release of Doctor Strange. It is one of my favorite origin stories from the Marvel Universe. I think this and Ant-Man. I mean, yeah, Iron Man was fine and Thor was cool and Captain America was good. You know, all these origin stories. And maybe Guardians of the Galaxy might have been my favorite, but that's such a... It's not really an origin story as in the traditional sense, but Doctor Strange, I thought, was probably the best origin story, that and Ant-Man. I just had a lot of fun watching. Now, the next movie you get in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is Guardians of the Galaxy. And this is a great bridge to that. It's a great movie. It's very visual. It looks beautiful, gorgeous on Blu-ray. It's definitely worth checking out. It's definitely worth getting the Blu-ray rather than the DVD because it does look so much better. And if you're a fan of special features, and I mean, it has the standard stuff. It has an audio commentary and it's got deleted scenes and a gag reel, bloopers, essentially. But we also have the basic stuff that you find, like, there's about an hour of behind the scenes how the film got made content. But what the stuff I found really neat was, first of all, there's like a 7 or 8 minute look at Marvel Cinematic Universe Phase 3 as we go into Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and what comes beyond that with stuff like Thor Ragnarok and beyond. But also funny is there's a little Team Thor Part 2, which we had I forget what disc that first part was on, but it's where Thor ends up getting a roommate. And it's a fun little in-character piece. So, I mean, it's a great little Blu-ray to pick up. It's worth seeing again. It's visionarily done. It reminded me a little bit of Guardians of the Galaxy in that that could have looked really bland, but they really made it pop. And this thing did some stuff that I'd never seen before on screen, and that's a tough sell. So, yeah, Doctor Strange on Blu-ray out right now. The other ones are, you know, some stuff you might have heard of. You got Allied, which was that Brad Pitt, Marion Cotillard German spy movie, which was okay. It's, you know, it's worth checking out if you like period pieces about World War II. Rules Don't Apply, which was Warren Beatty's film that didn't get mistakenly winning an Oscar. And then there was Moonlight that is out right now on Blu-ray and DVD. So if you don't want to go to the theater and see it, you can go rent it or buy it or stream it. And you can see what the buzz is about. It's a good movie. It's worth checking out. It's long. It's like 2.5 hours long, but it's definitely worth seeing. Anyways, that's it. I need to go for the week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Kong Skull Island. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.